what has transpired since Diane got this confession is bizarre. So why would Jerry send a serial pedophile who had child pornography found in his home after he was found dead in 2008? His name is Vernon Seitz, S-E-I-T-Z. Why would he send this man to meet Diane at a hotel to listen to the confession tape?
And he was hitting his checkbook. He said, I'm prepared to pay you what you want for these tapes.
Joe Persky is the county commissioner that was talking to Diane, and Joe Persky asked Diane and I both if we were concerned for our safety.
Well, then he said, there's five politicians shutting this down.
That's public corruption. That means that the Department of Justice should get involved.
Are you having trouble losing weight? It could be due to insulin levels that are out of balance. Learn what fat-flushing food helps balance your insulin levels. It's basically a hormone that determines how much fat your body stores. Over 240,000 women have successfully melted unwanted fat off their body fast, faster than you would think possible, keeping it off for good. Learn how so many people have melted fat so quickly. Click the link below.
But why would Patty Wetterling support her husband? I mean, why would you? It's your child. I mean, I'm confused as to their behavior.
Let me say this, okay? We can only say what the Boehners are saying on tape. It's got to be terrible to be parents of a missing child. So we cannot say 100% that Jerry Wetterling is involved or that Patty Wetterling is involved. However, what has transpired since Diane got this confession is bizarre. So why would Jerry send a serial pedophile who had child pornography found in his home after he was found dead in 2008? His name is Vernon Seitz, S-E-I-T-Z. Why would he send this man to meet Diane at a hotel to listen to the confession tape?
And okay, then did Jerry Wetterling know this man was a serial pedophile?
I mean, I don't know.
He said they'd come here and they'd go out to eat and.
Okay, so basically, he sent a serial pedophile to you. You don't have proof that he knew he was, but he was. So there's an indication that, and then he wanted him to listen to it to see what was in it.
Right.
Why not himself? Why not? This is your son. If it was your son, wouldn't you say, Diane, I want to meet with you and I want to go over all this with you at the sheriff's office or at the FBI?
Right.
Let's go to the FBI and let's go over all this. Let's have transparency and let's go over this whole thing. Why send a serial pedophile and then have that pedophile? Now, we don't know if Jerry sent him to collect money or to offer money. But Vern Seitz did offer Diane money for the tape. And he told Diane, I'm willing to give you whatever you want for that tape.
Sorry, who was going to pay for the tape?
Vern Seitz.
He was going to pay you whatever you wanted. So he was going to buy that tape from you.
Not just that tape. We were in Kay's kitchen in St. Joe, and he was hitting his checkbook. He said, I'm prepared to pay you what you want for these tapes.
And Jerry sent them there.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Why is that not a bombshell?
I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure, but when I said this ain't about money, my God, I thought he was gonna faint on me. He says, now what am I gonna do? He's a barber. What money would he have?
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Sarah. All right, so we know.
Go ahead.
Vern Seitz, it's very important that people understand this. Vern Seitz, his interview, another one that I think Diane got of him, you can hear him talking. Again, it's on my BitChute videos. You can hear this man, and it's important that people understand this. When this man was found, I think, dead in his home, he had hundreds of VHS cassettes, and nobody really knows what was on those VHS cassettes.
What do you mean he was found dead in his home?
He was found dead in his home, right, girls?
Yes.
Was he murdered, or did he commit suicide?
He had gone forward to the police.
Okay, first of all, I had talked to Burnside's sister-in-law. And she talked to Byrne a lot. And she said that he told her that he was worried somebody was going to kill him. Prior to that, he was at his psychiatrist, and he said he wanted to confess to a couple murders, okay? Nothing to do with Jacob, but this was a boy he killed in 59, and because he was abducted too. They were making a snuff film. So anyway, she calls the police. They don't go out there for 3 days until the neighbors call because he's not in his barber shop, right? So they go out there and they find him dead. See, Byrne was the type that he drew what he knew, saw, and did. Okay, and one of his drawings, it said, sacrifice your own son. Well, there was a guy on the internet he was asking me if Byrne ever sent me any of his drawings. I said, no, he went by the name One with God. I still don't know who that was.
Okay, let me just summarize this. Byrne confessed to murdering a couple boys, and he was making a snuff film when this happened. Jerry sent him, you think, or they're friends, and Jerry didn't go, this guy went, and then offered to buy those tapes off of you.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Now, Jerry.
And the authorities didn't find that as relevant.
Guess not.
And then he was killed after he went. What did he say before he was killed? Who did he go to? And what did
his sister? He was telling his sister-in-law he thought somebody was going to kill him. See, I think Byrne knew something because he told his sister-in-law years ago already. He said Jacob died a terrible death. Well, how does he know that? See, I talked to her for a little bit, but her husband, Byrne's brother, I think he's scared to talk about this because I heard him say, we closed that door 8 years ago. So I had to call her on her cell phone. And at one point she said she was going to send me some pictures, but I never got them.
In the press conference, the FBI and the local detective got into a fight, and they actually said, let's take this outside. Why the anger?
Julie.
I think one's trying to blame the other. You know, there were a lot of mistakes made. I just want to clarify back on this Byrne Sites. You know, the stuff that Diane's talking about here, about this sacrifice your own son in this poster. There were multiple posters like this, and this is all on a search warrant that we have.
It's what do you mean there are, okay, sacrifice your own son and multiple posters. What do you mean by that?
In Byrne Sites, when they found, after he was found dead, and this was in 2008 that he was found dead, 3 days after he had contacted his psychologist or psychiatrist.
How long after he talked to you, Diane, was he dead?
Oh, that was a while, wasn't it, Julie?
Well, it was 2008, and Diane talked to him in the late 90s. Okay, so what I'm saying here that's really relevant is that it's not just like hearsay that these things were found in his apartment. This was a search warrant that went in there and found these things, children's clothes, books on cannibalism, books, you know, things related to child pornography. This was all in his apartment. Now, I want to just clarify that he did state to Diane that Jerry sent him to listen to the tapes. So that was said by Byrne.
Is that on audio? Do you have proof of that on audio?
No, but my husband was there. He's a witness.
Okay.
And when I played that abduction tape, this guy was crawling all over the bed in there. I mean, I knew something was wrong. And he told me, I've been in the occult for years, he said. And let me know he had a gun in the trunk. And I called Kostreba about it, and he didn't do nothing.
You can hear all that. That's all on my bit shoot. You can hear Byrne talking.
Okay. There is so much here.
There is a lot here, and there's clearly something being covered up, and regardless, there's something here.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, there's obviously something here. You don't know exactly. Now, Jerry Wetterling not listening himself and setting this guy and this guy offering money, to me, that's a pretty bombshell kind of deal.
Yes, and...
How much money do you think he would have offered you?
I don't know, because he said, I'm prepared to pay you what you want for these tapes.
And Vern doesn't have money. So this
no.
Setting Diane up. I think they were trying to get Diane to take some money. So they could say... He was doing this for money.
Yeah.
He was not.
They were trying to compromise me, but I mean, I knew. And when I said that, he just, no, what am I going to do? He says.
Now, who was Jerry connected to in the local area or the national area that would give him any power?
I don't know, but I just feel like there's payoffs here somewhere. There's stuff I know that I haven't seen in the records yet. I mean,
for example,
stuff I report. You know, I tried to get Kostreba interested too, and when I called an owner, I said, "This guy's going to confess," and he says, and I said, "Why aren't you helping?" And well, I don't know what you want me to do. I mean, I couldn't get any help down here.
Diane, forgive me if I'm misremembering this, but did you tell me that there was also a Stearns County police, with Stearns County Sheriff's Office that said that they would kill him or his family?
That was Michael Boehner. He said that when Larry first talked to him.
Okay, but there wasn't somebody from the sheriff's office?
No.
Okay.
Dan New had concerns. And he was the investigator that was going to Diane's home, and it looked like his hands were tied. So he was going there basically to keep Diane busy. I mean, they did not want to investigate this, and it wasn't being investigated. And he was telling Diane, this is...
I got him on tape where he said Pierce just said she's crazy. You know, they were going to look at this, but yet they'd send Dan out, and Dan said he'd get back there. And what'd she say? And then Dan caught him taping his office.
Is there any benefit for the Boehners confessing
to lie, you mean?
Yeah, why would they lie about doing something?
They weren't lying. I could tell they weren't lying.
There's no benefit, and all their stories collaborate. In fact, they were scared, right?
I think right. What happened is when Michael Boehner confessed, and this is just my opinion, but I've talked with Diane and Tim about this. They thought they were going to see the drag races. Luke Holes talked about drag races. So I think at that point, they thought maybe, I don't think they knew that they were going to be part of this abduction. So they show up, next thing they know, they're in the ditch and they're watching for the boys coming. Their job was to sit in the ditch and watch and warn Lou when the boys are coming so he could come out quickly and abduct Jacob. So I think maybe... down the road, you know, 8 years later, he's deciding, I don't want to carry this burden. I don't want to be this whole thing to come down on me. And you know how it is when there's multiple parties involved. One will try to blame the other or whatever. And I think he felt like he was thrown under the bus and that he wanted to get this off his chest and that he wanted to say who was really involved.
Go ahead.
See, at that time, Michael was doing the 12-step AA, you know, and I think, you know, you're supposed to come clean with your sponsor and all this stuff, but I could tell he was bothered. I mean, he looked at me that day and he says, I lied. I really was there. And then he just, at first, when he came in my house, he checked all the outlets, make sure there was no tape recorders or anything. And him and Brenda were there, and I could tell he was nervous at first until he started talking, you know. He even got up and showed me how Lou grabbed Jacob, and it's the same hold that Lou always did with his son. Lou trafficked his son out years ago.
And he described Jacob fighting, punching.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What would be the motive of Jerry doing this? You said that there, or we don't know if he did it or not, but what would, you know, it's still, I have a hard time, you know, how could a father, he wasn't his real kid, was it?
No.
Is that true? Well, he wasn't his biological kid. Was he adopted by him or no?
Well, yeah, from what I hear, Channel 9, that way, she followed me for 10 years. She told me they found an adoption out in California.
Okay, so he was adopted. And Channel 9, the news have been contacting you to talk to you, haven't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They know. I mean, I had NPR out here. They were dropping tapes in my mailbox. I think it was three. They were going to come out with it on a podcast. And then, what was it, Julie? A few days later, they said it was Heinrich?
Within the week of the podcast, when the podcast was supposed to be released, they got out of Heinrich.
So NPR pretty much put together the story that we're talking about right now. They're going to drop it, and then suddenly there's a confession from
suddenly
Heinrich.
It was solved. Yeah, suddenly it was solved.
And prior to that, Diane and I had reached out. I had reached out to David Genrich, which is a U.S. The AG's office for Minnesota. He was an assistant attorney general. And I reached out to him, and when I spoke to him, he seemed kind of dumbfounded, you know, I don't mean that in a insulting kind of way. He just seemed like he didn't know, you know, he was like stunned. And it was within a short time period that Chris Bokers from the FBI and Dennis Kern from the Stearns County Sheriff's Office showed up at Diane's home. And this was May 2015 that they came, May 6th, 2015, and Dennis and Chris Bokers stood there looking at all of this evidence before them and didn't touch one piece of it, except Kern asked if he could see the receipt that Diane was talking about regarding the information being dropped off at the Stearns County Sheriff's Office in 1997. So she had this receipt, and he said, let me see that. So he looked at the receipt. They left Diane's home without touching one piece of that. And the only thing that I can gather from that maybe is when I had, you remember that I spoke about me talking with Richard Leonard from NCMEC and how they had trouble getting outside assistance. What I gather from that is maybe Chris Bokers' hands were tied at that time, because Stearns County said, we've got jurisdiction, you can't touch a thing, but you can go with them, but you can't. And so they were, maybe they were just in a standoff, and that's why it doesn't make sense to me why investigators would show up with a pile of gold mine of information, a prosecutor's dream, sitting there before them and not touch one piece of it.
I could tell that when Dennis Kern read that receipt, it was almost like he's thinking, I don't have any of this stuff. That's how he acted.
Dennis, who was he with?
Stearns County.
Now, who was the FBI? Who had jurisdiction?
Stearns County,
yeah. And they wouldn't let the FBI. FBI was in on this case, but they wouldn't let him in on my stuff.
Oh, so the FBI never got this information. Did you tell the FBI that it was that you had it?
Oh yeah, because Julie sent a lot of emails to them, and he finally came out.
Was he the guy that was on in the press conference that was mad?
No.
Who was the guy in the press conference versus the guy that came out to talk to you?
Al Garber, he was ahead of the FBI back in that time. Chris Bokers is, he's a supervisory agent for the FBI on this case.
So the one that was mad was the one that was in charge.
Right.
The one that was mad, that was Al Garber, and that was way at the beginning of the case.
Right.
It goes way back to the beginning of the case. The one in charge now, or was in charge when I got involved, and Richard Leonard was taking my emails and all the information that I was sending him and forwarding them all to Chris Bokers. Chris Bokers was assigned to Jacob's case. That was the one in the last 3 years. It could have been longer than that, but since I've been involved, Chris Bokers was assigned to the case. He was the FBI agent that was getting this information from Richard Leonard at NCMEC. So he was getting this information. I don't know what they knew before then, but I do know that Diane spoke with a local agent and talked to him about the Jacob Wetterling, the information from 1997 and the confessions and so on. She did talk with local agents before that, but I don't think Chris Bokers was aware of this information until it came from Richard Leonard at NCMEC, which is what the information that I sent him, one of them being the tape, the confession tape.
Okay, but then he came back here. I made him up a box of some information. Chris Bokers came and got it by himself because I told him don't bring Stearns County here. So he came and got the box. Where he went with it, I don't know. He claims he took it to Stearns County where the rest was. And when he left, he said, "You may never see me again." I thought that was a kind of odd statement. Are you supposed to be here or what?
That is kind of weird. Because why would you not? Who is so adamant? Who was the one fighting the Wetterlings to release those documents?
Well,
Mark Anfinson, the attorney for the media.
Okay, so what does he, and he's the one, Mark Anfinson, he's the one that said that if the public knew that quote, that it would shake the foundations of our society?
He did say that, but he was quoting something, I think, that a U.S. attorney had told a judge. So he was quoting another attorney.
Okay. What was that? He really wanted to see it. Now, why did he, do you think, because he thinks there's something of relevance in there.
And he's made more comments now because they're still withholding thousands of files with the FBI. They've only released some of the state files. They're still withholding files on this case at
so
the federal.
So what was his, gosh, what was the comments that he made?
He said something about that it was strange that they're still withholding these files because they're so old. And he said something like, he kind of rhetorically said, what is so important in those files that they would need to, it sounded kind of cynical, you know, like.
It doesn't make sense.
Herald, didn't he say in the Herald that he was deeply disturbed?
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't make sense that they would hold these files. Now, these files are, files like that are almost always released, right? I mean, it's part of public knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you asked a question, Sarah. You asked a question, you know, a minute or two ago about why would the Wetterlings want it covered up or something to that effect? I'll venture an answer on that. Now, obviously, none of us, we don't know, you know, what happened. We don't know everything that happened. But I think that the starting point for that question to be answered would be a federal investigation into the area involving cult activity. That's just my opinion, where they might find some answers to why Jerry and Patty Wetterling might not want this coming out.
Well, it doesn't make sense. Their behavior doesn't make sense. Jerry paying somebody to get a confession to me is very disturbing. And then the guy that had those posters saying that you sacrifice your own child. Now, did he sacrifice his own child? Not Jerry, but the guy that was killed.
No, he was gay. He was never married.
Okay, so why would he have all the? Is that's cult activity, right? To sacrifice.
Vern Sykes's house was a house of horrors. If you saw books on cannibalism, he's all into that. I think he had like toys, handcuffs, and he had hundreds of videos. Nobody knows what's on those videos. Are they snuff films of little kids? Is there a pile at a Mount Everest of evidence found in Vern Sykes' house of missing children all over our country? Are they on those tapes? He had hundreds of VHS.
Well, can I interject just a little bit here on the cult thing? Because we don't know if there's cult activity. That's kind of why Diane is held onto the tape. Because if you say the word cult, people just kind of scatter and they think of conspiracy theory and things like this. But these things really do exist. They are real and they exist.
Yeah.
There's three things that tie cult activity into this, okay? And Vern Sykes' home, they found multiple posters referring to cult activity, and then the one saying sacrifice your son. They also found documents pertaining to Jacob Wetterling. That's also in the search warrant. And there's other things pertaining
to Jacob Wetterling. What documents did they find referring to?
It just says documents. Now, okay, so he's talking about sacrifice your own son. All right, he's got a witness. There's a witness, a friend of Jacob's, that talked about Jacob being adopted for ritualistic purposes. So you got him. So you got those two things.
Who said that about Jacob?
A friend of Jacob's.
Said that.
Please clarify
what you just said.
This guy played hockey with Jacob every week. Okay. He came up to me in the store. I knew him, but I knew him from a restaurant, and I didn't know he knew Jacob. So he comes up to me, and he says, I think Jerry adopted him for ritualistic purposes. Well, I almost fell on the floor. Three of us people heard this, and then, how did it go? He said that Jacob used to come there scared all the time, and he would try to, you know, console him. They played hockey twice a week, I think. Well, then I told the guy, well, you should come over and hear this, and oh, he wanted to, but then he got scared, and he said, I live in St. Joe, and I want to keep my 12-year-old boy. And then I think it's Pam Jensen. I'm not sure. I think that sent the cop out to talk to him. Well, then he got mad because the cop came out because these people are scared, you know? I mean, I got his name. I know where he works. We just haven't been able to put anybody that you could trust investigate it. Stearns County sure isn't gonna.
The record, this kid, because if he was, well, he's an adult now, but he was interviewed, so shouldn't that be in the record? Shouldn't that be in the file?
I don't know if he was interviewed.
Something else, Sarah?
Do you actually think they did their job? Huh?
Something else, Sarah? Right. And on my website, again, on that one page, I actually typed out the entire list of what was on that search warrant, because it's books on cannibalism and all kinds of bizarre stuff. But I think there was stuff involving other missing children too, including like a map. And now I don't know if it was, first of all, I think Vern Sykes had a picture of Jacob Wetterling before he was abducted, which is weird. Like, this is the kid. Okay. And then I think he had like maps of towns where kids disappeared. And the reason I'm pointing this out is because it looks like this guy may have been a kidnapper or a child procurer. You see, like, he had maps of, like, here's the map. Here's where, you know, that's what somebody who's going to do a kidnapping will have.
See, Sarah, Luke Holes, he was at my house one day, and a friend of mine was there, and he was getting real, like he was irritated that day. And he grabbed this paper and pen, and he said, I'll show you where everybody was that night. And he drew this map. So when he left, I called down to the department. Dougie Pierce said, bring it right in. Well, I've never heard a word about it. And back then, they wouldn't give me a receipt. I don't know what happened to it. I think they either took it with them, hid it, or burned it.
You know, the more important thing is, well, we want to get criminals that did things in the past. Do you think this stuff is still going on? Do you think that the importance of covering it up, even to this day, is to allow this activity to continue?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because getting to the root of this will save additional children from being hurt.
Right.
I think that the United States Attorney General Jeff Sessions, I think he has to initiate a task force on this. I think it's the only way they can dismantle this, because I think it's been in place for decades.
Oh yeah. And even Ben Bina, that one time up in St. Joe, he was riding his new bike with a friend, and he said this guy came running out of the woods with a dead animal dripping blood, and he scared the hell out of Ben Bina. He said, I left my new bike and I left. So yeah, this stuff is going on a lot. And the guy on my tape, let's see, that was back in 98. I mean, at that time, he said there's 2,000-3,000 strong right here and all the way to the cities. And he said some in Cold Spring and some in St. Joe.
What do you mean 2,000 strong? 2,000 people who are active in it?
Yeah, Satanists.
Bingo.
He said they're in a lot of different professions. Oh, yeah. Well, I took it to the FBI. The FBI here was the only one I talked to. When I told him what was on it, he put his face away from the table from me. And then he looked at me and he says, well, what do you think, Diane? I said, I think the guy is scared that this guy is interviewing him again. He says, or he's telling you what you want to hear. Well, I knew he was lying to me because the guy that interviewed him told my cousin 2 years before I even met this guy. And he said another thing. You can worship who you want. You want to be a Satanist?
You can be, yes.
Unless we find criminal activity we can prove.
Got to look.
And this was the FBI agent that you talked to earlier.
Dan Lund.
You can be a Satanist, but you can't kill children.
Right.
You can't do criminal activity.
Right.
Now, all of this evidence besides the cult activity tape that you have is all available on your website, Tim, right?
Yeah, most of, Diane withheld a few of the stuff about cult and stuff, I think. But yeah, Vern Sykes is very interesting to listen to that man describe his life. I think he had to kill a kid. Yeah, it's all on my.
And he all talks about that.
Yeah, he talks
what?
About it with.
Does he talk about Jerry and his relationship? How he knows him?
Well, they claim that he came here when Jacob was missing, and he had some kind of insight, like a foyer, and wanted to help look for him. But it's funny because he talked about being at the Wetterling home, eating ice cream with the kids, and Patty said, well, on one of those things, she said, well, I met him a couple times. Well, Vern Seitz is saying he knew him 8-9 years.
Yeah, Patty Wetterling publicly admitted that.
Did she?
I think it was, yeah, didn't, I think that was, she publicly admitted that she knew, didn't she?
Yeah. But she said she met him a couple times.
Yeah, just a couple of times.
Now,
yeah.
Is there anything in these files that you found so far that is relevant at this point? Or do you just need more time to look through them?
They just came out.
I know, they did. But is there anything when you've been scanning them and looking, is there anything yet that gives you and I know there's a lot still missing, so I would think that what we got isn't the good stuff. But of what you got, is there anything in there that you found so far, knowing there's 40,000 and you've only had like a week?
I talked to Diane the other day about a witness that was interviewed on November 6th, 1989, which is just a couple weeks after the abduction. And she said she saw a burgundy Monte Carlo, and she was disturbed because the man that was with the Monte Carlo, he's all dressed in dark clothes, and he got outside the car and kept staring at her. And she said it really disturbed her. It was enough for her to call the Stearns County Sheriff's Office. Well, the burgundy, Luke Coles owned a burgundy vehicle, but we called Diane's friend in Wisconsin that knows Lou well because she knows about this vehicle. And she said, was it a Monte Carlo? And she said, that's it. That's his car.
The one he burnt. Yeah.
Yeah. But the car was spotted closer to 9 o'clock. And the only thing I can think of is if everything here is true, what the Bainers are saying, and they abducted him, you know, between 8:30 and 9 and maybe like a quarter of 9. Brenda Bainer's apartment is only about six or seven minutes away. And it's very possible that where he was spotted, which was the other Tom Thumb in St. Cloud, that's only about 6 minutes away from Brenda's apartment, but in another direction. So it's possible that the Bainers took him to, and Luke Coles took him to Brenda's apartment. Apparently, they said he was taken in a sleeping bag and he was held there. It's possible, and this is just a scenario that I put together after reading this, that he went to make a phone call to say the job is done. If this is what happened, if he was hired to do this and paid to do this, and he made the phone call to say the job is done, because the woman said she didn't really see him carry anything out of the store. And this was back in the day before cell phones. So you got to go to a payphone to make a phone call if you're out and about. And you said
Luke Coles came into a whole bunch of money after this, didn't he?
Yeah, he was up at Sharon's. Well, I think I told you, Lou even tried to buy that baby off her because she ran a foster care home.
Right.
And
he was trying to buy a baby?
Yeah, they use it for sex. Yeah.
How do you know they buy a baby and use it for sex?
Because Lou told her.
Oh, my God. And was she just horrified at that point? Or was she actually
doing it? Well, she told her, her husband kicked him out of the house at that point. But when he had the money, he was talking to her husband that he came into some money and he wanted to put a down payment on his house or something. And then she said the neighbors thought he won the lottery because he bought a new car, he bought all new furniture, stuff like that.
Okay.
He was a dishwasher, for God's sake.
Seemed like a creep, as far as I can tell. What would you like to see happen in this case at this point?
Well, I'd like to see the right people in jail.
Justice be served and do their job.
And if they did dismember this kid like they're talking about, and then 3 months later, a boy's torso pops up down at St. Paul at the dam, that's just too close. Lou Coles says, he tells his ex-wife, he kept bringing up Jacob being dead, and she said, well, nobody knows what happened to him. She said he just yelled at her. Jacob's daddy's 6 blocks from the house in Milltown. I told them, he said. I don't know who the hell he told.
Yeah, he said, I told them.
Yeah. Did he tell them and he got let go of this or what? Something's weird here.
There seems like a lot of weird things here. One thing that I wanted to ask you more about is Jacob's friend that he used to play hockey with. They were both 12 or something.
Yeah.
You were saying that he was scared. Now, did Jacob tell him things that happened to him?
I think he did. But that's all he said that night. And then I didn't see him after that. But then later he got mad at me because I think Pam Jensen sent a cop over to talk to him. And I think he figured.
She sent a cop. Was there follow-up after that?
Right. No. No.
Obviously not. And didn't he tell you he was afraid that drones were flying over his home?
Yeah. He said, now I suppose I'll have drones over my house. Now that you mentioned that. I had one of those the other night over our house.
But that's happening anyways. It could be. But yes. Okay. Well, I got a lot out of you, and it's probably confusing for a lot of listeners who are just joining in, but we'll try to do a little recap. And then you, Timothy, also have all that information on your website where they can get a better idea of what's going on. I'm going to probably put pictures of who the players are up front, because it's really confusing at this point. Just do a little overview. But where can they get more information?
Well, I don't know. Outside of, I've got so many documents, a couple hundred tapes. I mean, somebody'd have to have a slumber party here to go through all this.
Sarah, I haven't done it yet, but I tell you what I'll do is after we're done with the interview here, I have the entire file, the folder of everything that they've released so far. I'll put that link at the very top of my homepage, and then anybody in the public can download it.
Okay, that would be great.
Just make the whole file.
Pardon? Because then we do citizen journalism.
Right, yeah. Everybody can take a look at it.
Well, can I bring something up that we just heard today that's disturbing me?
Yes.
Tim, I was just talking to you on the phone about this just before this interview.
Oh, yeah.
John, a reporter from Channel 9 called Diane and said, I'm looking at the, did he say gravesite or the casket?
He said, go to the, what was it, evidence photos or something. And he said, I saw the body of Jacob. Well, really? Where and how? I mean, I got a picture of the gravesite out in St. John's. I said, how did they not find any bones where they dug and now we have a body? Right. And I told the FBI, I said, if you got anybody, I'd say it's that one you found in the river.
And then, and Chris Volker said that the remains disintegrated and that's why there wasn't any human remain. He said, well, they disintegrated, Diane. They have a tooth, but the rest disintegrated. So he's saying on one hand, they disintegrated, okay? But then this reporter saying, it seems to me, or it feels like this, like he was told to call Diane, and this kind of thing has happened throughout where there's these different barriers or these walls that they try to put up. We were told in the remains, on the findings, on the warrants, it says no human remains. Furthermore, Chris Volkers told Diane, his explanation was that the bones disintegrated. And then you go beyond that, and you're hearing that suddenly now there's remains. And I asked this reporter, "Where's the skull?" Well, you'll see. Just look, and then you call me. Well, I couldn't
He said he didn't look. He didn't look. And then he says to me, "Well, you know, Diane, you're stretching this Wetterling thing out."
See, yeah. He was told to make that call. Isn't that interesting?
Sounds like it.
A mainstream news reporter is now making phone calls and trying to talk people off this case.
And before, you couldn't get him to call you back.
Yeah.
You
couldn't get him
to this evidence. And it just sounds like something isn't quite right here. It seems like, and I have to wonder about Madeline Barron, because she threw all those tapes in your mailbox. She went through all this with you. The first words out of her mouth when she came in your house was, Heinrich did not do this. And then she was that to let your guard down? So you would say, oh, good, I got a straight shooter here. Let me tell you everything that's going on here. So you go through all this. She interviews you. She interviews Larry. She interviews me for a little bit. And she gets all this information. Where did she take it? Why all of a sudden do we have a confession from Heinrich the same week? And why did the Wetterlings stop the file the same week we reached out to the county commissioners? And the county commissioner said, hey, we want to help. We want to help you. And then they contact the sheriff's office. Suddenly, the Wetterlings are suing to have the file stopped.
So the county commissioner reached out to you to get more, and they wanted to work with you. And the Wetterlings are suddenly suing to close these files. This is just weird. The whole thing is weird.
The county commissioner was Joe Persky. Joe Persky is the county commissioner that was talking to Diane, and Joe Persky asked Diane and I both if we were concerned for our safety.
What'd you tell him?
Well, I said more so for Diane because she's in the area. I'm in Ohio. You know, I don't.
Well, then he said there's five politicians shutting this down.
Oh, so there's five now. Is that national? Is it local? What politicians did he?
He wouldn't say. He wouldn't say. Oh. But if he knows there's five, he must know who they are.
That's public corruption. That means that the Department of Justice should get involved.
And we've written the Department of Justice.
Yeah.
Sent certified mail to the FBI, and Diane was tracking that letter that she wrote, and it sat in Minneapolis for how long? 2 weeks?
Six days.
6 days. Before she finally got a stamp that it was received in Washington. So she wrote, and I called the FBI in Washington, D.C., and I spoke to somebody in the intake. They don't have you talk to agents. You talk to somebody in the intake department. And as I was talking to her, I was telling her the best way I could. There's a lot here. I was telling her a summary of this, and they were typing it into the computer. So
yeah. So where does it go? I think there's something so big behind all this. And it's not good.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we can have you back once we, this is going to blow up in the public, and we'll have you back to give, to talk more about this, because now that these files are coming out, more people are coming out. We're going to have to kind of see what happens over the next month or two and then reconvene.
I think you're right, Tim. I think he called this morning because when he said, you know, you guys are just, you're just stretching out the Wetterling story. You know, that's how they see it. Stretching it out, you haven't done nothing with it.
Well, I don't, it's, to me, it's not even, it's a bigger thing beyond just a boy that's missing. It was a very famous case, so it gets a lot of people interested, and that's good in that way. But it's a bigger deal than
Sarah. My husband's making motions. He's going like this. That should tell you.
Okay, well, let's just plan on getting back together once more kind of comes up and we have this material that we can talk through. And I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Well, and we thank you, Sarah, because, you know, you're kind of at the forefront of this topic, and it takes a lot of courage to do it.
Well, thank you.
I certainly appreciate it.
We appreciate you. We appreciate
a lot.
What you do.
A lot.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you.